Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast. Here with your hosts, Jacob Smedley,
Sam Betts,
Justin Rehan,
Peter Amarante,
and Nathan Romanoff.
Topics today include the MLB trade deadline is right around the corner. A few stars could be on the move, and one NL East team is already making a few moves to start their push for the postseason. And the NFL, last week we had teams that were going to improve. Now we have some teams that are going to take a step back. We got a new host leading the segment. We're glad to have it. Now here's Sam Betts. Sam, MLB trade deadline is almost here. What can you tell us about what's going down? The rumor mill. Sam, you are at the top of the rumor mill. Let me know what is going on.
All right, Jake. The MLB trade deadline starts August 2nd, or actually ends August 2nd. This is the point in the MLB season where teams are getting ready to either buy guys, ship them out, and like you said, make a playoff run, or just kind of take out some of those guys, remove them from their team, and start a rebuilding process. We're getting close to the postseason here, only a couple months away. And the trade deadline is where teams can either make or break that run here. Already the last 2 days, including today, the Mets have already made some moves. First off, yesterday, the Mets acquired Daniel Vogelbach, the hefty lefty, as I would like to call him. He's a big guy with a
peak,
big bat.
Peak baseball athlete, I would like to
peak
point
baseball
out.
Athlete.
Peak baseball athlete.
The Mets received him from the Pirates in exchange for Colin Holderman, a young pitcher, about 26, made his MLB debut in May, I believe. Vogelbach is a really good DH option. While he's only batting .228 with 12 homers, he's a really good bat against right-handed pitching, as he really excels at that. I think he's batting around .260. His OPS is around .896. For those who don't know, OPS is on base plus slugging. That's a really high number for a guy, especially against right-handers. They put him in that DH spot, he's going to crush the ball.
Yeah, and I think especially just to know, I mean, he's really filling the spot Dom Smith was supposed to have for this Mets team, but just really a bad year for Smith, being demoted a few times, and getting a guy like Vogelbach now can be that lefty against righties as they, you know, try and use him and J.D. Davis in that lineup.
And with the Mets already leading the NL East, he's going to further power them forward. Like you said, Dominic Smith has struggled this year. A guy who's usually been pretty good the past couple seasons that he's had with the Mets. But this time, being demoted to AAA, being called back up, being switched up and down, yeah, that's hard for a guy to deal with. So Daniel Vogelbach, this is his time to shine. That Pirates team hasn't been doing too well. So they kind of get him for a young relief pitcher is kind of a steal here. Also, he was a former All-Star in 2019, so maybe he might not be able to get to that prowess right away, but who knows, maybe in the future he can kind of just keep that bat rolling. The Mets also made another move here earlier today. They acquired Michael Perez from the Pirates, a couple Pirates deals between the
Pirates
Mets
and, the Mets, man, making the trades, getting the trades started.
Yes, Michael Perez goes to the Mets from the Pirates in exchange for cash.
Oh, those cash considerations, they're going to be a huge asset for the Pirates, man. Can't wait for them, those cash considerations, to develop.
Definitely, especially if they, when the international signing day kind of comes up, if they want to some international prospects, that adding that money to that pool could really help them sign some key players for their future. Other than that, Michael Perez, not the best batter, only batting .150 with 6 home runs and 11 RBIs, but adds really good defensive depth. As James McCann is still struggling from that oblique injury back, I believe, in July. Yes, July 10th. He's been in the minor leagues kind of rehabbing. Patrick Mazeika and Thomas Nido have been filling out that catcher spot. All right, Patrick Mazeika has had some clutch moments for the Mets in the past couple months, but Michael Perez just adds really good catching depth. He's a really good defensive catcher, a good person to have behind the plate for those upcoming pitchers. That's all the trades that have been done so far.
Yeah, I think quick, I guess, just to look at a Mets perspective here, of course, getting these two players, getting the ball rolling. But, of course, these aren't moves, at least these two right now, that I think take them to that if you're looking at that they are definitely one of, if one of the two or three best teams in the National League so far. Don't know if it moves them over the Dodgers in my eyes, but like you mentioned, Sam, these are two positions, really DH and catcher of need. I still see the Mets going out and doing more moves around the edges to supplement their stars coming back from injury, but these are two solid depth moves, guys that add bodies in there. They've had really good depth guys perform well. So I think this is good for them as a whole, these two moves collectively.
Yes, I know the Mets are also looking to get some relief pitchers here as the trade deadline kind of expires here, but there's a lot more time to make moves, and I'm sure general managers are from all teams are communicating with each other furiously as we get to that point. One of the big guys who it's going to be a race to see who's going to get him. Juan Soto recently just denied a 15-year, $440 million contract from the
Half
Nationals.
a billion, ladies and gentlemen. That is a $500 million, nearly. Nearly.
So my question is, my biggest question is to you and Jacob, Sam, and Nate can chime in if he wants to. Where do you guys see him landing? Where do you see Soto ending up?
Well, the good thing about Juan Soto is that he's very young, only 23 years old. The guy's already won the Home Run Derby recently. He's already won a World Series. This guy is a phenom. And really, any team would be lucky to have him, especially to get that outfield depth. Now, the Nationals are looking for four to five prospects in their package, and there are a couple teams who could really supplement that and kind of make that move. One team that, Peter, you're asking about what teams are looking for, the Padres are one. The Padres have a lot of really good young prospects and young players with low service time. That's another thing that the Nationals added too. They have CJ Abrams, Mackenzie Gore, Robert Hassel, James Wood. Those are just four guys on their top prospect. Well, two of them being on their top prospect list, two of them formerly being on their top prospect list, now being rookies, and CJ Abrams and Mackenzie Gore. Especially with Robert Hassel, if he develops really well, he could be that next national outfielder, kind of not necessarily fill in that Juan Soto role right now, but maybe in the future as that team looks to rebuild. The Nationals are in a
Hold on,
very
hold on, hold on, Sam. You mentioned CJ Abrams and Mackenzie Gore. You have to think those guys would be included as well. You've got those great outfield prospects. But also, I would expect the Nationals to look for guys who have good experience at the major league level as well. Those are two guys right now that are keeping the Padres winning, especially Mackenzie Gore as another starter for a Nationals rotation down the line, and Abrams, who again was another top prospect shortstop. The Nationals, I think, the point is they need help everywhere, and those guys are two guys who have also proven service time now in the majors, success in the majors.
Exactly. And the Nationals farm system isn't too built up, really. It's kind of one of the more depleted systems in the MLB. And getting guys like CJ Abrams and Mackenzie Gore to help field that MLB team would pretty much help. Like you said, they need to fill in every position. They are in a rebuilding mode, which is why they want to get rid of Juan Soto, which is why they got rid of Max Scherzer. And they still have Steven Strasburg, but Strasburg hasn't necessarily lived up to his full potential as he has in past years. They're looking to get some new arms in there. Mackenzie Gore, like you said, could be one of those new aces of the Nationals team. If we move on, I don't think this one's going to be too much of a surprise for Jake here, but the Yankees are another top guy. The Yankees are close to making the playoffs. They're 65 and 30 for the record this year. They're 12 games in front of the next team, the Rays. And they are making the charge for the playoffs. They're trying to make it their year. Like I said, Nationals are looking for prospects, looking for guys with low service time. Jason Dominguez has taken the minor league world by storm. He's an outfielder. He's recently been on a couple of futures teams for MLB All-Star Weekend. He's performing well. He actually just got called up to A Advanced, I believe. So he's making his mark. And along with that, they have guys like Anthony Volpe, Oswald Cabrera. They have a lot of prospects who they can trade too. And they're a team that, if they got Juan Soto, really round out that outfield and win
Oh
another
my goodness.
championship.
I can't even imagine that right now. I can't imagine that.
You want to talk about hitting powerhouses, man. You already got Aaron Judge on that team.
Yeah, move him to center. He's been playing center field.
Giancarlo Stanton, who was recently the All-Star MVP.
There was another All-Star player from the Yankees.
I mean, Joey Gallo, but he stinks right now.
Yeah, Joey Gallo's powered that. 160, 10 home runs.
Aaron Hicks, who's had an all right season.
Aaron Hicks is usually a solid player.
I think that all of us could agree that if Juan Soto landed in the Yankees' hands, it would just take their dynamic from pretty powerful team to this is a powerhouse team, because, you know, that's just that extra push with how well Juan Soto can hit.
That would be the Golden State Warriors of Major League Baseball. The Kevin Durant Warriors.
That team would have so much batting prowess, it wouldn't even be funny. They would be the super team of the MLB if they got Juan Soto. And the Yankees are willing to give up those prospects for him. I believe it. They're willing to make a couple other moves, too. Possibly get Luis Castillo, who's been on the who's been known to be put on the block by the Reds recently. The Reds, again, another team looking to rebuild, has not done well this season, looking to kind of ship out players. Luis Castillo, who's really rebounded after last season performing terribly, has come back to a fairly decent role. I believe a 2.77 ERA, 3-4 record, but record's not always everything. That man's a strikeout machine.
That's true.
So the Yankees have a couple options, but Juan Soto, I think, is at the top of their list right now.
Yeah, I just wanted to say hypothetically, how much, if you were the Yankees or even any of these teams, like the Padres you mentioned, it was another name that kind of stuck out to me, how much would you be willing to give up for Soto? Because, you know, gotta think, these young talents, these young prospects also could turn into these powerhouse players in another year or two. So how much are you willing to give up now for Juan Soto as compared to other teams who might want to just keep their prospects because they have a lot of faith in their prospects in the future?
Exactly. And, you know, for having prospects, you want those guys to develop in your system. You want them to get better and perform well for your major league club. But that's why prospects are so great. They could be used for the club that drafts them, that signs them, or they could be traded to go to any other team. It's because you never know. You don't know what could happen. An injury could happen. Maybe there's a down year for one of the prospects and they go down in the rankings. It's up to that team. But I think a lot of teams would be willing to kind of ship out their farm system for Juan Soto. I think that he's such a valuable aspect, so valued throughout the MLB, that a lot of teams would be willing to deplete those farm systems.
Sam, I agree with your point. You give the farm. You're talking prospect stuff over here, Mr. Getting signed baseballs by these prospects. Good on you, Sam. Good on you.
I like
but
my
if
prospects.
I'm any contender out there, you are giving away the farm. You are giving five, six, seven. You are giving all of your top prospects, the Yankees, the Padres, the Dodgers. You're giving away all the... This is a one-in-a-generation type of hitter in Juan Soto. What he is doing at the plate, he is having a bit of a down year right now, but he is a guy that I don't even disagree with the statement that I've been hearing where wherever he goes, that team could essentially become the front runner in the league. So to answer Peter's question, I think, again, like they're saying, it could be an astronomical haul for this guy.
Definitely.
You know what would be really interesting? And I know this is reaching. Like, this is well beyond reaching. We have plenty of MLB season left. But hypothetically, Yankees get Juan Soto, right? It's a Yankees-Mets World Series, the ultimate pitching team versus the ultimate powerhouse batting team. Like, wouldn't that be such a great... And it's a New York versus New York team. It's like literally...
That would be Subway Series. Yeah, that... And I would say entertaining, even though I don't want to... I would not want a winner.
For sure, both teams... For sure, no.
Just both teams lose. One more team that I have. This is a bit of a dark horse. Let me hear this.
Rays!
Now, let me say, like I said...
I'm not saying this is very likely
that this will happen, but let's think about this real quick.
Tampa
Bay Rays, again, are 12, well, the Yankees are 12 games ahead of the second place team, who is at the Tampa Bay Rays in their division. Well, why would the Tampa Bay Rays go for Juan Soto? They're 2 games ahead of the AL wild card. They are in fact the front runner for the AL wild card, so they would get a spot in the playoffs. What would happen if Juan Soto went to the Tampa Bay Rays? That team would blow up. They have a lot of good prospects in Curtis Meade, Taj Bradley, Randy Arozarena would be probably someone the Nationals would be looking for. He has not too much service. He has a little bit of service time, but not a lot. And he would definitely probably be someone to add into that group there, that little gift there for the Nationals as they give away.
Oh yeah, given the postseason Rays hero away, Sam. All right, continue, continue. Amused me right now.
I feel like
Continue.
Juan Soto with his bat or his Juan Soto shuffle could give this MLB team, the Tampa Bay Rays, another push for the World Series. They did it in 2022. Obviously, they lost to the Dodgers and it was a shortened season. They did make it to the World Series. It gives them another push to make that playoff spot, and I think it secures them to make a deep playoff run. And even he has another Juan Soto has like another 3 years on his contract. This gives this team another 3 years with this guy, make the playoffs, advance further, and maybe even win a championship. Who knows? But that's just one of the dark horses that I think could make a big difference, who could make a possible case for getting Juan Soto.
Sam, I love the dark horse. All right, I mean, again, it is up in the air. There were like 7 to 10 teams right now submitting offers. similarly, comparably to Kevin Durant, how we talked about it last episode. That is the kind of player we're dealing with, where really mostly all of the teams, of course, outside of the sellers, similarly to the Nationals, would want this guy on their team. I do like the Padres. I think that team's one of the favorites to get him. Yankees in the mix. I'll throw in another dark horse. The St. Louis
That's who
Cardinals.
I was going to
The
mention too. I was
Cardinals.
going to say
Yeah,
something real
another. I
quick.
think that was another dark horse. Of course, you have the Dodgers, the Mets, the other New York team is
Toronto
rumored
Blue
there. But the
Jays.
Blue Jays, yeah, him and Vlad, that would be pretty crazy. But him with Arenado and Goldschmidt in the Central. I mean, I think of them as being a team more geared towards pitching, especially at the trade deadline. But man, if they could flip some of these, Liberatore would probably be
Nolan
in there.
Gorman.
Yeah, Gorman, who has played very well so far, Carlson perhaps, or Bader. But if you can add Soto to those other two all-stars in the middle of that lineup, that would be very intriguing.
No, I agree with you, Jake. And you know what? It's so up in the air, but the trade deadline's a great thing. You never know what's going to happen. You have your front runners, you have your kind of dark horses, but at the end of the day, when that clock reaches, what time is it usually? Is it 4 o'clock?
I think it's four, yeah, four
Is it
o'clock,
four?
and
It's
it's moved back to the August.
on August 2nd. That's
August
it.
2nd.
That's all.
That's it. Well, Sam, didn't you have one other guy on the Angels, one of the best players in the league that some teams were calling about
Some
here.
teams were calling about him, and it's very surprising what this team said about this superstar. Shohei Ohtani has gotten some looks from other teams. Multiple teams have been calling the Angels at, "Hey, we have a deal for you for Shohei Ohtani. Hey, what about Shohei Ohtani? Hey, give us Shohei Ohtani." But the Angels have said no. The Angels have had a really disappointing season so far. I believe they're 33-57. They had like a 12-14 game losing streak, something like
Yeah,
that.
one of the worst in franchise history, I believe. Yes.
They started off really hot and cooled down instantly, and they have not kind of been and they haven't been able to get back to that starting position that they had. Right now, Mike Trout, I know, is heading to IL right now with, I know he had like a cortisone shot recently. That's going to put him out for a couple days. This team is struggling, but they refuse to trade their two superstars in Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout. It's going to be a bumpy road for Angels fans as they haven't even reached the playoffs in 8 seasons in a row. So hey, kudos to them wanting to keep Shohei Ohtani. Kudos to them wanting to keep Mike Trout, keeping the faith. But I feel like there's going to come a point in time where it's going to look very bleak for this Angels team if they can't turn something around in the next couple seasons.
Yeah, especially the looking at the supporting cast that they've attempted year after year to put around these two guys. And It's just not there. So again, if there's any defense to trading him, of course you don't want to trade a guy that is, home run derby champ, this phenomenal two-way player that is amazing for the game, one of the best icons the game has right now, is such a superstar, top 5, 10 player in the league in my eyes. But to like we were talking about Juan Soto, he would commend a big offer that you could build prospects, get MLB-ready guys to get depth that this Angels team doesn't have around all positions. So definitely something for them to consider, but definitely understand them, no matter how bad they're doing, shooting down, trading that kind of guy. Well, we will definitely monitor the trade deadline coming up August 2nd, as Sam said. He said the date and the time. So stay tuned to see if any of our big predictions happen, any other moves as well. We will also break that down for you at some point, most likely. NFL news. We talked about the teams going up last time. Justin, no, wait. No, Peter. Peter, take the helm, man. Take the helm. Teams that are going down? Peter, what do you got for us, man?
Thanks, Jake. I did teams that, of course, on like Justin did last week, teams that he thinks that are going to improve this season based off of their off-season moves. Well, I took a collective look at teams who faltered in the off-season, who did not take advantage of the trading, the free agents, and may not have played the draft well at all, and also who lost players that have impacted their teams. And I made a list of my 4 to 5 teams that I think were not completely bad teams, but are going to take a hit on their record or on their performance based off of this offseason. And number one, I think that the five of us here can agree across the board that took the biggest hit is the Seattle Seahawks. I said that losing Russell Wilson to Denver Broncos just was the biggest hit any NFL team has ever taken. And I can see Nate cheering
Nate
right
is
now, and I'm huge for the Broncos.
it's liking
Pumping his
that.
fist over there.
In all honesty, look, you have no QB room. The running back room is shaky. I mean, Rashad Penny, he's an all right running back, I guess, but the running back room is sloppy. You lost your best player on that team, keeping that mold together. And you can argue, sure, there's players that are good here and there, but DK Metcalf, great breakout wide receiver who, with a good quarterback, could do amazing things. Now has Drew Lock to throw to him. Everybody, it's Drew Lock, ladies and gentlemen, throwing to DK Metcalf. So he lost all hope of getting good targets this year. And like I mentioned, Drew Lock's primary target isn't his own receivers, the other team's cornerbacks and safeties. So I think that they're going to be the one taking the biggest hit this year for this season, and hopefully they can get stuff sorted out sooner rather than later, because Seattle fans, I'm sorry, this is not going to be your season.
Yeah, Peter, I I'm agreeing with you because I was saying it back when we were doing the draft special. If they don't
Oh,
draft the
yes.
quarterback, they are,
GM's
yeah, the
fired.
GM's fired, and guess what? He's fired. Get him
He's
out of there.
fired.
Although he wasn't
Justin is
actually
taking his
fired,
place,
I
everyone.
would have
Justin
fired him.
is resigning his spot on the podcast. He's going to be taking the GM job for the
And I would do a better
Seahawks. So
job. I would
yeah,
do a better job.
exactly.
Yeah. Let me tell you, this team has nothing in terms of talent in the QB room. I'm sorry, I'm not a fan of Drew Lock. He had his time and he did not do anything with it. So I think that personally, without a quarterback, your team is not gonna make a run, and I think they might be one of the worst teams in the league. I think they're gonna be fighting it out with Houston for last place.
Yeah, going off of the Seattle team and just how much they're fading away, unfortunately. I hate to be this guy, but I don't even remember who they picked up in the draft first or second or third or at all. I could not name you one Seattle Seahawks player that got drafted.
Shows how much you did your notes, Peter.
Yeah, but I,
Oh.
okay. But in all
Hey,
honesty,
you came at me last week, man.
I did. But all
Revenge for
honesty, think
Sting
about
the
it.
Spedley.
They used to be a celebrated division. One of those teams where it's like, oh, you're in a really tough division.
Well, I gotta interject here because this is actually Jacob's point. He said this in the break for the fans at home that it was one of the best divisions in football just 2 years ago. Like,
so I'm like, gonna call you out, and you're gonna come at my idea now. All right, well,
I'm sorry, Jacob, take it away.
No, it's for the episode, man. Here we go. This was a fans want. This is what the fans want.
Just be like Sam Betts and say, hey, anybody can say anything, you know. Anybody can help me out.
To wrap up my first team, you know, it's the Seattle Seahawks. It's going to be a really rough ride for them, and it's going to be a rough recovery road for them, especially with having really no one to offer in future trades except for your best receivers and maybe Jamal Adams. So we'll have to see what Seattle does there.
Hey, Peter, I got you covered on their first-round pick, bro. It's Charles Cross, Mississippi State.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Thank
you. Yeah, he was actually
not going to be doing much, you know. Well, he'll protect Drew Lock, but won't matter much. They'll stay.
They really won't.
Don't forget, like they also lost Bobby Wagner, target. Peter. So
they did.
You know,
they
this team's just a shame.
For nothing.
They lost him for nothing.
To it's a terrible. Division rival.
Just, exactly. It's just terrible business.
You know, it's just going to be rough for Seattle. And I think that they have a lot of important decisions to make before we can even consider them having potential to be a good team again.
They're having a worse offseason than the Flyers. I mean, seriously.
Wow.
I don't know. I mean,
wow.
That's
wow.
A big
put
statement.
That in there.
I did.
But it really puts into perspective.
Moving to my second team, this is a little more controversial, but I said the Cleveland Browns. Now, again, this is not a segment about who is going to be a bad team. It's about who is going to take hits from the offseason that they've had. You lost Baker Mayfield, right? And we already said this multiple times. He's a mid quarterback. He's mid, all right? He's not good. Not the best, not the worst. He's mid. But you also lost Jarvis Landry, right? And you're having this, we've talked about this so many times in the podcast, I can't even count. You have no idea what you're going to do with Deshaun Watson. The NFL doesn't know what they're going to do with Deshaun Watson. So there's a huge, giant question mark in this QB room. You picked up Amari Cooper. He's a viable receiver, sure. But for what quarterback? We don't know. With Deshaun Watson, yeah, he's got an arm. But I guarantee you he's going to try to use his legs so much more if he plays in his arm because he wants to show off how he thinks he still has that 2014 talent. But that's going to hurt the backfield and Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt.
Nate is waiting. Nate is waiting to say something.
I'm gonna see it to Nate here. I want to hear what Nate has to say first.
I just got to interject here. Peter, he wasn't even in the league in 2014. Hell, he's playing for Clemson. He won the national championship with Clemson in 2016.
Yeah, 2016.
So I don't know what the hell he's
talking
about.
He was in
sorry.
High school. He was bench pressing in high school.
Okay, I was referring to a younger Deshaun Watson.
He is still
he
young. He's a young
league.
Quarterback, bro.
I understand that. I was referring to him in his days of college. But anyway.
If I may interject, I thought that I was going to agree with you, Peter. But then I looked at the record and I think maybe I disagree. I think they're going to be around the same. I don't think they're going to
breaking,
be that,
breaking
be
news. Nate has jumped ship on the Peter the Peter train from last week and is jumping ship on this specific
team. Peter, what else you got to say here, man?
Like I said, I got to keep reiterating. I'm not saying these are going to be horrible teams this year. I know I started with the Seahawks, but there's no question about it. The Browns took a hit with losing Jarvis Landry. Your only viable
receiver. They got
viable
Amari
receiver.
Cooper, dude. It's like a fair
That's
swap.
That's your only viable receiver. You lost Austin Hooper. He's out of the Cleveland team now. You lost a decent tight end. You have a big question at quarterback of who it's going to be.
And Joku's still there.
And depending on who your quarterback is, your backfield's going to suffer in production. And as
they still
as
have the
Nick
best
Chubb
backfield
Cleveland,
in the league.
I'm 100% agreeing with that. But if Deshaun Watson decides to run like the wind, they are not going to have as many touches as they did in the last couple
If he decides to run like Lassie is what Peter's saying, they will suffer. Peter, you haven't even mentioned the defensive side of the ball either. If anything, I think they got better on the defensive side.
Miles Garrett's still there? I mean, yeah.
Denzel Ward's playing well, I believe.
Thank you, Jake, for bringing up my counter statement.
Okay, there we go. There we go. Segues here.
The defense is a notable defense. I will say they are a noteworthy defense with Myles Garrett, and you said Denzel Ward. I mean, the only reason I put them on this list is because they have so many holes in their offense with losing Austin Hooper, with losing Baker Mayfield, with only picking up Amari Cooper for Jarvis Landry. I think there's too many holes in the team.
I'm more of a, I think they're going to stay the same, because they were an 8-9 team last season. It's kind of mediocre. I think
you still think they can add 8 wins this season?
If Deshaun Watson plays, yes. I think
so. You're saying 7 or less, Peter? Is that 7 or less?
I'm saying 7 or less wins.
They have too much talent, even with a quarterback questions.
I think that if Deshaun Watson plays, then yeah, why not? Why can't they get 8 wins, you know? But if he doesn't, then it might be a lot tougher.
Peter, and I just, your argument about if when Deshaun Watson plays, him somehow taking touches away from Chubb and Kareem Hunt, I don't get that, because
he was more of a pocket passer, yeah, too, with the
exactly. He's not going to take their yards away. He's not going to take, you know, their runs away. I can't see that. And just the whole Amari, I mean, they got Amari Cooper for Jarvis Landry. I feel like that's pretty even, if not, you know, maybe a slight upgrade just in terms of age of, you know, the players and talent, you could say. They're pretty on par, though. I don't see it.
But who's your second target for your quarterback then when they're covering Amari Cooper? Who's your second target?
There's other receivers in the room. Like Justin
but
said.
What, yeah, we're going to go what, back to no. the Chicago Bears conversation, what, Peter. There's roster, other receivers bro? In the room here.
Oh, you know
yeah.
what, Jake? You know what, Jake? Let's do that because they're number 3 on my list. Let's do that.
Oh, here we go.
We're moving off of Cleveland already. You want to get out of this?
He's out.
If you
3 versus
talk Cleveland,
1.
Let's talk Cleveland. They're on my list.
They got Donovan Peoples-Jones. Donovan Peoples-Jones was pretty good last season.
I don't know. I just think that it's going to be a rocky ride for the Browns. That's all I'm
agree,
saying.
Well, agree
Peter,
to disagree.
We still don't know how long, you know, we don't know what Deshaun Watson's punishment is yet. Look at that way, man, you know.
And that's going to hurt
him. He's an
camp.
Upgrade over Dude, Baker, cause... too. So as far as we know, I just see them having improved.
All right, we'll have to see, I guess. The next team I have, and I'm going to get torn up and down by Justin for this, but it's the Chicago Bears.
Up, down, left, right.
Hey, Jacob was on my side, too, last time.
Yeah, it was me.
I'm so glad, Justin, that you feel the way you do. But from my viewpoint, you lost Khalil Mack, one of the best defensive players in the league, and he was the most impactful defensive player for the Chicago Bears. You lost him. He's gone. You lost your best wide receiver in Allen Robinson. So you have Cole Kmet at tight end. Newer tight end, you know, he's not very noteworthy for having breakout yards and breakout receptions like Gronkowski, Kelce, and Mark Andrews are. And, you know, he's not very known for setting up dominating blocks to open up holes for the running back, you know. And to be really honest with you, we don't know much about Justin Fields. He hasn't had a lot of time to really prove himself or to showcase his full potential of skills, you know, with who was starting for the Bears last year, who wasn't starting for the Bears last
year.
Yeah,
and maybe
their head coach
could really change things for him.
But when you're getting down to it, the only promise you have on this team is the only promise you have is a semi decent running back. A pretty good running back with David Montgomery.
Give him his flowers, Peter.
Give him his
better than he's better than semi-decent. He's better than semi-decent.
Yeah, he's good. He's good.
Yeah, I think he made the Pro Bowl.
I can't make any promises on Justin Fields. We don't know enough about him. And losing Allen Robinson, the biggest target for the Chicago Bears, is going to make his production decline, because you have no veteran wide receiver on that team that's noteworthy enough to improve Justin Fields' resume, to improve the way he plays. And I think that losing Khalil Mack is going to extremely damage the defensive front. And I just think that the Chicago Bears took tons of hits this offseason, and they're at a point where they're going to have a struggling season because the O-line isn't the best. They're not very well known for creating giant holes for David Montgomery and Justin Fields. We saw him a lot of the times when he played last year. He had to break out of that pocket. He had to break out and he had to roll out of protection because they were faltering. They were giving up the line and defenses were coming at him. We saw it with Andy Dalton. We saw it with Justin Fields. They were rolling out, and then hoping to God that Allen Robinson's going to catch it. Who's going to catch it this year if Allen Robinson's not there?
Peter, again, your opinion, I totally respect it. Your point is on point with what you're bringing to the table. I'm just going to provide it from this point. In comparison to one of the other two teams you mentioned, the Seattle Seahawks, a team now that is entering a rebuild, I feel like, in my personal opinion, Chicago has been in that rebuild for multiple years now since they had that dominant defense. They're still in it. I'm not saying they're out of it, but I feel like Fields, I feel like this is the year. He, of course, still don't know what he fully can do, but I am confident with a new coach, like a dark horse pick, like Sam's dark horse pick for baseball. That was mine. I think this could be possible, the year where he can take that jump and get 7 wins.
But that's with yes. Whose help, Jake? Whose help?
You don't need the best receivers to produce better stats. You don't need somebody.
I think that last week we made similar points to what we're doing, but I want to make a different point this week, and that's that I'm looking at their schedule, and it's not a very strong schedule. You know, they play teams like the Texans, the Niners, the Seahawks. They play the Commanders, they play the Dolphins, Lions, Falcons. Like, these aren't very strong teams, you know.
7 wins!
They could get seven wins. Like, they play the Lions twice, so.
But again, they could also lose those games, so I could really be wrong.
I argue that the Lions had a better offseason than the Bears did.
I mean, it doesn't take much to get lucky in the NFL. Sure, I mean, these are winnable games, is the thing. These are winnable games, and I think that if things go their way, they could win.
You have to consider, sure, there's a new head coach, so it's going to take some adjustment learning him. Justin Inu, and everybody knows this who's playing an organized sport. There is no I in team. So you have to have surrounding help in order to have a breakout year. In Justin Fields' case, he doesn't have that. He lacks that. He lacks the help. He lacks a wide receiver that can create separation. Jacob, shut the hell up. He lacks the offensive line to protect him. He lacks the defense to prevent points from being scored on the other team against them. He lacks the supporting cast to his movie. So there's no way that you're telling me this, that, sure, Justin Fields can have a good year. There's no way you can tell me that the Chicago Bears are going to have a decent year because they have a weak schedule without a supporting offense.
Peter, I know that there might not be any notable receivers on the team, but I don't think you can just count them out just yet. It's not like there's like no actual people to throw to on the field. It's not like Justin Fields is going to throw the ball and no one's going to catch it ever. There's going to be someone who's going to be there to catch it. It might just take time for those guys to develop. Maybe someone has a breakout year. Who knows? But you can't.
That's the point. I'm not saying they're going to be terrible. This is a team that has taken a big hit that I think has downgraded since the offseason. But we'll have to see, you know. I feel bad for Justin Fields, but we'll have to see. And at number 4, I'm kind of tied here. I have the Falcons and the Texans noted both here.
4 and 5. We're going 4 and 5 here on the list.
Well, I have a little bit to say about both teams.
The Falcons, I have a little bit of a comment for the Texans, but I want to hear what you say first.
Okay. So for the Falcons, you have a really good tight end in Kyle Pitts. I will admit that right off the bat. Cordarrelle Patterson proved to be a vital player on that team last year with his, I forget who in our little group had him on fantasy, but he was scoring points like a madman. But, you know, the unfortunate thing is sure, Matt Ryan, he's a veteran quarterback that deserves a better team to play on. But now with Marcus Mariota, with having been not playing so long in the league, you wonder, the value of Kyle Pitts, is it going to waver because Marcus Mariota is rusty or because he doesn't have the same kind of playing style as Matt Ryan does? Is it going to waver because Cordarrelle Patterson, he's kind of one of those, like, can catch but can also run in the backfield kind of ordeal? Is that going to waver? So, and, you know, I just feel like the Falcons, a lot of their season depends on how well Marcus Mariota returns. And the Falcons' defense, they're not fully there, and you know, I brought him up accidentally, but Calvin Ridley's not there. He's has a full season suspension, so that's going to take a hit on the wide receiver room. So I think that the only reason I have them on my list is because of the big question mark of how is the team going to adjust to a veteran coming back from such a long time being off and how the playing style adjusts to him.
I like your comments for the Falcons. I do think that they're going to be a team that takes a step back, you know? They're in a new adjustment with the new quarterback, you know, their receivers without Calvin Ridley especially, it's going to be, you know, tough to find targets in that room. So I think that they get Olave
in the draft, right? A rookie they brought
in. It was Drake London. Drake London.
I'm getting the OSU. Yeah, USC.
So I mean, guys. they added. That was their first round pick in the draft. They added to that receiving core, but like Justin, you were saying, I mean, and Peter, losing your quarterback of many years is not ideal for any team, and I don't see it being ideal for this Falcons team with their young talent.
And I just feel like even with Matt Ryan, unfortunately, they've been sloping downward, you know, Matt Ryan, and it's tough because Matt Ryan, I believe, and hopefully we'll see it this year with the Colts, he has a better performance with a better team around him. And I feel like he could improve his performance with viable receivers, with Michael Pittman being on the Colts and with Jonathan Taylor there and all that. But, you know, that's for another time. But I feel like we all mentioned Marcus Mariota is that big question mark. How is this veteran going to come back from being off so long? How well is he going to perform? And I haven't really seen them make any real moves to improve their defense much at all. And I don't know. I just feel like they lack in the when it comes to making a team, improving all aspects of the team rather than trading away your quarterback or, you know, losing your quarterback and trying in hopes of picking up someone good, you know?
Yeah, and I think just, I guess, a quick point about the quarterback room. You have the question about Desmond Ridder. Is he going to get in there at some point? Is Mariota going to be a placeholder for a certain amount of weeks to, depending on how he's playing personally, they might, you know, start, like, let's just say 0-5 or whatever. Maybe you just give Ridder to see what you have in him. Because he's the rookie. You want to hand the keys over to him. So that could definitely be in the equation.
And I mean, I think that Marcus Mariota does have that veteran's perspective of the game that he can help out Desmond Ridder with, like saying, let me help you mentor in what I've experienced.
Very similar skill sets, at least when Mariota came out to what Ridder seemingly has.
What worries me, and I brought this up a few times, is how long he's been out of the game for. Because a lot of these veterans, like Joe Flacco and even Alex Smith and all these other guys who are older veterans, but still semi been playing in the league more as backups than as anything, are now able to help these rookies who have seen the adjustments in the game. Because the game has changed a lot since Marcus Mariota played last. The talent has skyrocketed, I think, in that.
Peter, you're talking like he's out. He's like in the XFL or something. Well, no. He's been on teams. He's been playing.
Yeah.
I just think that it's going to be, I think he's going to play the role of more of a mentor, and he might start the season off, but I think that having been not a starting quarterback for the last couple of years is going to impact his offense a little bit. So we'll have to see what the Falcons do.
Yeah, do you also wanted to say something about the Texans too? Is that what you wanted?
Yeah, so the Texans, again, it's kind of like the Seahawks. They didn't really, the draft wasn't it for them, really, I guess. The Texans have Davis Mills, a quarterback who tried his best last year. I'll give him credit for it. He tried with what he had. Looking at their depth chart here, you got Brandon Cooks at wide receiver, who, you know, he can show up when he wants to, and he's got decent stats, but he's not anything where it's like, oh my gosh, you got Brandon Cooks. You know,
he's a multiple-time Pro Bowler, Peter. 1,000-yard seasons.
Sure, true. But he didn't do all
he's
that
not
much.
Like, he's not like a top 10 guy, though.
Yeah.
Not anywhere close to top 10, you know?
Maybe top
20. Maybe. And I think that the only really two or three notable defenders here are Derek Stingley Jr., who they picked up in the draft, and maybe Steven Nelson, you know? But other than that, like, I feel like you got these holes in this team that you need to fine-tune in order to get the Texans back on track of being an average team again. I think that a lot of these teams who lost their big players, like the Seahawks, the Texans when they lost Deshaun Watson, and they lost Will Fuller, right, recently?
To the Dolphins, yeah. He signed with the Dolphins last year.
You know, I just feel like these teams with holes in their in their rosters. And I don't mean little holes like, oh, we really could use a safety or a tight end. There are significant holes that need to be filled. I think that they're going to have the most struggle this season. And that's why I have the Texans, the Falcons, and the Seahawks being ranked my top three who have suffered the most in this offseason.
That's just where I just want to, before Nate goes here, I just want to say real quickly, like, how much worse can the Texans get?
The rock bottom. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
They were 4-13 last season. This segment's about teams that are going to get worse. Like, what, are they just going to lose all four of their wins, like, from last season? That's the only thing
I'm
saying.
They are going 0-17,
I agree with you.
Justin.
I think that they're a bad team, and I think they're going to continue to be a bad team. Like I said, fighting for the last spot with the Seahawks, but I don't know if they belong in this list because they're not a team that is going to get worse from last season. They're going to stay the same and be one of the worst.
Yeah, and just to point out, I agree with what you're saying, Justin, and I think they had a good draft. Derek Stingley at 3 was a surprise, but he's a good pickup, a good cornerback, and I like, you know, they got John Michie III from Alabama in the second round. That's a good pickup at wide receiver, so they're starting to slowly rebuild that team. Do I think they're going to be any better? No, definitely not. They're not going to be a good team, and they will be at the bottom of the league this year, but I agree with what Justin said. I don't know if they're actually going to be any worse off this year than they were last year. I mean, I think that, you know, it'll take time, but they're slowly trending in that right direction. I think, you know, this past draft was a hit for them.
Yeah, I'd say they're starting to turn around. I just think that, you mentioned, there's some more fine-tuning to do for this team. And honestly, I think once you hit rock bottom, you can't get any lower. And the only way you can go is up. And that's true for the Texans. That's true for the Seahawks. And that's true for even maybe the Falcons, you know, like they're more trending towards the right direction than the other two teams that I mentioned because, you know, the talent of Cordell Patterson, Kyle Pitts. And I just feel like, I don't know, the only place these teams can go is up. And like I said, in the start of this isn't an indicator. My list is not an indication of who's going to be the worst in the league. It's an indication of who took hits in vital places that are going to cause them to perform at a lesser level this season than last season.
Yeah, well, we will definitely have to check that out. I can't wait for the season now. I can't wait to see which teams we're feeling are going to improve, go down, perhaps.
Before we go, can I just bring up one more team here, just off the cuff, real quick?
Oh, yeah.
Less than a minute. All right, I just want to bring up the Kansas City Chiefs. I think they're going to be a team that declines a little bit, too. They lost two of their best players, Tyreek Hill,
Justin, this is PETA's list, okay?
I'm just saying, it's a team that wasn't mentioned. It's a team that I think should be mentioned. I think that they're going to be a good team next year. I think they're going to be 9-10 wins, you know, wild card team. But I don't think they're going to be the winner of that division. I don't think they're going to be as good.
I think that with the Chiefs here really quickly, Justin, taking a loss of Tyreek Hill is a huge hit. Although Juju Smith-Schuster isn't a bad wide receiver, and they picked him up. And did they not pick up the Green Bay Packers receiver?
Valdez Scantley.
Yeah. And he's got some legs on him. He can move pretty quickly. So I think that losing Tyreek Hill and Tyrann Mathieu were hits. Sure, I don't think they're going to win the division, but I also think that they are trending more in the direction of rebuilding after losing Tyreek Hill and Tyrann Mathieu.
I agree. That's definitely a team to keep an eye on along with the rest of these teams. Any more, Justin, Nate? Any more teams we should mention? Get in there. We'll definitely keep an eye on these teams moving forward as the season closely approaches. Quick shout out, Braden Fosnot, local kid, Danville, PA. Big congratulations making his way up Westchester University, then going to the Trenton Thunder, and recently signing with the Philadelphia Phillies. Big congratulations to him, and hey, Lunch Hour Sports Podcast would love to have you on, see if we can cook something in the works with that. That will do it for this episode of the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast. Thank you for listening. For future episodes of the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast, check us out on YouTube, Spotify, and thank you, Anchor, for sponsoring this episode. Talk to you next time.